morning. Welcome to Your Turn. Mike Clausey here. Glad to have you with us, as always. And we have an interesting show today. We're going to be talking about the strange and wonderful world of Washington, D.C., life inside the Beltway, and how everything changes and nothing stays the same, and yet it does. My guest today is Katie Maddox from the Federal Managers Association. You watched the State of the Union last night, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Did any takeaway for federal workers, postal people, retirees?
There really wasn't any direct mention of the federal workforce. I know we heard about cancer research. We heard about Ebola. We also heard about NASA. But the thing is, I think there is really a disconnect between the federal workforce and what they do. And I think we saw that in the State of the Union, because that's what federal workers do. They work on, you know, cures for cancer, you know, response to Ebola. And they're also the ones going up and preparing for space exploration. And I really don't think that a lot of the American public realizes that.
It's funny you'd say that, because years ago, the Washington Post, I wrote a column, and I just, in passing, said that the first man on the moon was a federal worker.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the national news magazines picked that up and thought that it was very pathetic and parochial and narrow on my point. But Neil Armstrong was, I think, a GS-14 mm-hmm. at the time.
Yeah, and I think you're correct. I think a lot of the American public, they view astronauts as, you know, what images we got in the movie The Right Stuff, you know, a member
yeah.
of the Air Force who has risen through the ranks and is also incredibly smart. But I mean, there are also incredibly smart civil servants as well. And I really think that we need to remind the American public of all of what civil servants do.
So, and you were saying before the show that, and I think most people, myself included, thought that the entry point was to be a flyer at mm-hmm. Air Force or Navy, a good test pilot, but and Sally Ride, the teacher, was an exception. But you're
yeah.
saying that they can come up through the NASA ranks as well.
Yes, that's correct.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
But I mean, and I think that's just one example that, you know, the American public forgets about with the federal workforce. I mean, federal workers are astronauts, we're social workers, accountants, you know, law enforcement officers. They do a wide variety of jobs. They're not just, you know, the image of sitting behind a desk and stamping papers and checking off boxes.
Yeah, well, and that's the kind of thing, too, people need to be reminded when you see these very frequent articles about that federal workers are overpaid,
mm-hmm.
and then they take it from statistics that show the average federal worker makes more than the average non-federal worker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope so. You know, Uncle Sam doesn't do retail.
Yeah.
You know, very few federal agencies have greeters at the door, or, you know, like the big box companies. And what the government does, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's highly professional, administrative. The clerical end of it is very small. It's
yeah.
high tech. And it's just the nature of the beast.
The federal workforce also employs more people with higher degrees than the private sector. So you're seeing more people with masters, PhDs, JDs. You're seeing more that kind of education than you are in the private sector.
Very good. Oh, and Lauren Larson's our producer today, and she's standing by to take phone calls if people have any questions for Katie or myself. The number is 202-465-3080. That's 202-465-3080. Okay, how can you mess up a phone number? I just did it. Okay, Katie, I know there's a project or a program that FMA was working on for a couple of years
mm-hmm.
that actually came to pass this year.
Yeah.
And that's, I want to call it the Wounded Warriors, but it's sort of beyond that.
Yeah, it's the Wounded Warriors Federal Leave Act. It was just signed into law by the president at the end of the year, right before Veterans Day. And it is a great program. What it does is it provides additional sick leave to first-year federal employees who qualify under the Department of VA as 30% disabled or more. This came out of one of our chapters in Cherry Point, North Carolina, down at the Marine Corps Air Station. She herself is a manager, and she saw employees struggling with sick leave available. I don't know if you're familiar with the area, but, I mean, It's a long
isolated,
way.
Yeah.
It is. It's isolated. And she was saying that it was taking her employee about 3 or 4 hours just to travel to the nearest VA to get you know, needed medical attention. And he, you know, young guy, new to the federal workforce, and he was just burning through all of his sick leave available. And it just came to him deciding, like, you know, well, what am I going to do? Like, am I going to go to my job, or am I going to get the care that I really need? And if you're familiar with how they rate disability, 30%, that's incredibly significant. It's either hearing loss in, you know, total hearing loss in 1 year, loss of a limb, severe PTSD. This isn't a minor medical problem. And so we are just so grateful for the work of Representative Stephen Lynch in Massachusetts and Senator John Tester from Montana. They just totally championed this program, and they made sure that it got through. And we're so grateful to their help.
And the chief instigator was one of your people at Cherry Point.
Yeah, it was Sue Thatch down at Cherry Point, North Carolina. She came to us with the issue, let us know what was going on, and you know, we were more than happy to help her out.
Yeah, and as to your point, that a 30% injury or disability, think about if somebody said, which 30% of you are we going to shut down?
Exactly.
It's not going to work.
That is a great point. That's a great point.
Very good. Now, So we did that. There were hearings yesterday in the House, the Government Oversight Committee, sometimes heated hearings about federal workers.
Yes.
And it's, you know, the Republicans are saying the government is not well run. Government rules encourage people to mess up and get away with it. Mm-hmm. The Democrats were championing feds in this case and saying that some of the proposals that are being pushed through are punitive, that maybe a return to the spoils system. I saw that Joe Davidson in the Washington Post today had a good column about it in which he points out his view of the partisanship of it.
Yeah.
What's the issue up there? What's going on?
There were a couple of bills up at OGR yesterday. One of them was the probationary period. So currently, federal employees have a 1 year probationary period that begins at their time of hire. And what this time is supposed to be is management viewing employees' qualifications, how well they're doing at the job. And during this time, the manager can decide yay or nay, like if you're well suited for the federal workforce.
And they don't have to give much reason, do they?
No, they don't.
I mean, it's really, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I know when people complain about you, they say you can't fire a federal worker.
Yeah.
And many people in the government will come back and say that's because of this year-long weeding out process.
Yeah.
When you can almost say, I don't like your looks, out of here.
Yeah, it is technically an at-will employment during that time. But one of the problems that FMA is seeing with the probationary period is that it ties in closely with also agencies' training periods as well. If you look at the FAA and the IRS, there are some training periods that go on beyond that year. An FAA controller, their training, I believe, is 18 months. So you're forcing managers to decide on the competency of employees before their training is even over. And you're kind of putting them into a hard position with that. So what FMA has been advocating for a while now is tying the probationary period to training. So we're asking for a 1 year probationary period that ends after an agency's training period is complete. We're hoping that will give managers more time to look at, you know, how they're doing in training, whether or not they're doing well, and whether or not they can move on. And I think you will see that, you know, that will benefit greatly the FAA and the IRS that does have that, you know, extended training period. But then also, FMA has a lot of managers that supervise mechanics and DOD, and they don't need that much training. And so I think this is also going to be beneficial for them. So they're going to go through like maybe a couple months training at the most.
Excuse me, I'm going to take a short break here, but I want to pick up on that and ask you when we come back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey. I'm talking with Katie Maddox from the Federal Managers Association. Interesting discussion about this probation battle that's going up on Capitol Hill now on the House side before the Government Reform Committee. And the issue is the federal workers now have a one-year probation period. And as you were saying, they serve at will, so mm-hmm. they can be let go for very, in some cases, insignificant reasons, but they can just say it's not working out. You're talking about agencies like the IRS and the FAA that have longer training periods, mm-hmm. longer than 1 year, and you would like to give them a break in that and extend the time. On the other hand, there are some places where the training period is shorter, the learning curve is less so, and that would work. Now, what's the argument? On this show, we don't like to get political and, you know, make philosophical choices and put words into people's mouths, but this does seem to be on the Hill, at least on the House side, a Republican versus Democratic issue. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yesterday in OGR, you saw the Republicans push through a bill that would extend the probationary period for 2 years after training is complete. So that's longer than what FMA would like. We do think that it is a step in the right direction, where lawmakers are recognizing that different agencies have different training needs. So we're glad to see that this flexibility is starting to be examined, but 2 years is a little long. If managers haven't been able to figure out whether or not an employee is capable of their jobs within that time period, then we need to examine what managers need, what tools they need.
Well, excuse me for interrupting, but did I hear you right? Is it 2 years after the training
period? Yes.
So in the case of the FAA employees, mm-hmm. The air traffic controllers, and as you said, the IRS has several strenuous, lengthy programs. So I could go 18 months and become an air traffic controller, mm-hmm. and then still have two years of probation?
So that's about over 3 years of being an at-will employee.
Okay. I mean, and that's the danger of it,
that is
you
the
think.
Danger. Yes, that okay. is the danger. But I know yesterday Chairman Chaffetz brought up the fact that we also need to look at what training we're giving managers and to examine poor performers, performance issues during this probationary period, and making sure that they have the capabilities of hiring competent people. And I think we also need to examine that as well, along with the probationary period.
Well, you know, in journalism, the mantra is the five W's: who, what, when, where, and why. Most of those you can pretty well figure out. The why is always the tough one. Why? But I would ask you in this case, why are the Republicans, why do they want this considerably longer probationary period? I mean, do they have ulterior motives? Is this a return to the spoil system?
I can't really speak to that, but I think lately we have been seeing federal workforce issues becoming more and more partisan. And unfortunately, I don't think that's right. The federal workforce is working for the people, and we are trying to make an efficient and effective federal government for everyone, and you would think that everyone would be on the same side for that. So I would like to see, maybe in the remainder of this congressional session, that we come together a little bit more on these issues.
Well, there are some people who really hate the government and hate government workers and all they stand for. This sounds like maybe some of those fall in that camp.
Well, I also don't know if, you know, this is a blind hatred, mm-hmm. and they don't really understand what the federal government does. I think we saw, you know, kind of a turnaround of opinions during the 2013 shutdown, when people saw that they weren't getting their small business loans because people weren't able to, you know, go through the process with them. You know, senior citizens weren't getting their Social Security checks just because the government was shut down. Our national park systems closed. And I really hope that we start to remember what that shutdown caused, and just the inefficiencies that it created.
Well, you wondered, you had this situation, I don't know whether it was this year or no, it couldn't be this year, it was last year, where there were leaks out of the Secret Service as to why Chairman Chaffetz who wanted to be a Secret Service agent, why he was not chosen. And there were sort of, you know, dark implications there, and there was invasion of privacy and a number of things. But you wonder if that sort of thing creates bad blood.
Yeah, I'm really not sure about that. I mean,
you can't be happy about it.
You can't be happy about it. I mean, it doesn't do any good.
Yeah.
It's not building any bridges, you know, to, you know, make things better. And I think people were at fault for that.
It's interesting. You could probably go back in time and find that nothing's changed since the days of Thomas Jefferson. But it seems to me you had a couple of things that came together here that are hurting the image of federal workers. Some of it's partisan, some of it's genuine concern. You had those stories 5-6 years ago about federal workers being overpaid. Mm-hmm. And then there were different varieties of that ran on the front page of most newspapers in the country. The data showing feds made more job for job, they made more regionally, that kind of thing. And then you had these many scandals. There were almost about one a year. Yeah. You had the famous GSA romp in the desert, you know, that one that was so well publicized, and a couple of heads rolled, but it sort of set the tone. And then you had problems with the Secret Service in Colombia and in Europe and here in this country. A scandal here, you find out people are using government credit cards for very illicit and illegal purposes, you know, doing things. And it just seems like it's created a climate that for people who don't like the government or don't like government workers, don't like what the government does, can build on this and say, we've got to take it in hand.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's one of those situations where stories like the GSA scandal, stories like the Secret Service scandal, you know, they just sell better, and you're not hearing of all the good works that federal employees do on a daily basis. You're not hearing about how much they help out their communities. And I know back in October, we had the Service to America Medal Awards presented by the Partnership for Public Service. And I think that just highlights all the good works that people do, like how different employees save the government money, how they do interagency work together, you know, for law enforcement, promote STEM education, and look for cures for really problematic diseases. I remember one year someone was honored because he eradicated, polio. And you don't hear that in the news. All you hear is the bad things.
I believe last year, I think Dr. Frances Kelsey died. She was a physician with the Food and Drug Administration back in the day. Mm-hmm. And she's the one person, and she took a lot of heat for this at the time, but there was a wonder drug out of Germany called thalidomide. And it was for women who were experiencing a difficult pregnancy as a, you know, morning sickness and that sort of thing. Widely taken in Germany. They wanted to sell it over here, and she blocked it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of pressure from the drug industry and individuals and from people who wanted this drug to make themselves feel better. Well, it turned out it had horrible side effects.
Exactly.
Children were born with flippers instead of arms. I think there were 10, 20, 30,000 of them in Germany and others in Europe. They're now in their 50s, those kids, some of them, but they existed. And she was a heroic person, and it took tremendous courage to block that, and her superiors were pushing her to free this drug up, people like that.
Yeah, and I don't think you hear about people like that enough. I mean, that is a great work. You know, she saved lives.
Yeah.
She's a federal employee. And I don't think if you went out on the street and asked some, you know, someone just walking down, like, hey, do you know who this person is? They're not going to know who she
is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's ancient history, and it's to more current things. The Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA. I think most people are familiar with the situation, at least on the surface. There were allegations, some of them proven to be true, that the VA in two installations, I believe one in Phoenix and, and another one in the West or Midwest, that they were cooking the books. They had two sets of books. One is the actual schedule of when they were seeing patients, and the other was books that said, former Sergeant Jones checked in yesterday. We got an appointment for him next Wednesday, when in fact it could be weeks or months before that happened.
Yeah.
Got a lot of ink, a lot of press, a lot of political people jumped on it, and the allegations that were true were outrageous. Mm-hmm. The actions were outrageous. A couple of people got censured for that, and recently, I believe, two BA employees were demoted from the senior executive service back into the GS ranks. Are you familiar with that?
I know people have been held accountable for their actions, and that's great. You know, if you are found of wrongdoing, you should be responsible. I am, however, concerned of what this vitriol is doing to the senior executive service. Already, the SES has a hard time recruiting people into it. And what are you going to do if you don't have leadership in the VA, an agency that really needs competent leadership right now? And I think that's one thing that we actually need to look at, you know, the cause of what happened in Phoenix and what caused these books to be cooked. And what we can do about that, not just the symptom of poor leadership. How do you build up the VA again? That is what we need to examine.
Well, the VA, for the people who wanted to get at the civil service, was a perfect case because mm-hmm. it's wounded veterans,
yeah.
men and women who've served their country, deserving, needy, and they were cooking the books, and they proved that it was true in some cases. When they said, do something about it, the VA, the administrator of the VA, the director, the secretary, mm-hmm. Said, we don't need it. We've got the authority already. We can act and we can do it. And Congress insisted. And did they actually put that in place, that it is now easier to get rid of an executive or transfer them in the VA than it is in other agencies?
It is. They made it incredibly easy to fire SES members in the VA, kind of putting them at will status as well. But again, you need to look at what is that going to do to the morale of SES members who do their job competently on a daily basis and are there to serve our nation's veterans. How are they going to look at it that, you know, do they feel like they have a target on their back when they haven't done anything wrong? I think we need to examine the morale situation at the VA and what we can do to build it back up.
Short break. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Katie Maddox from the Federal Managers Association. And before the break, we were discussing the fact that the House Government Reform Oversight Committee is looking at legislation. I guess they passed it yesterday mm-hmm. that would extend the probation period for federal workers. It's currently a year, and that's you're serving at will. So that's a pretty long probation period mm-hmm. in an at will situation. The committee action, which was a Republicans versus Democrats, with the Republicans prevailing, but the committee action was to extend the probation period to include the training period, which mm-hmm. could be 6 months, could be a year, could be 18 months in the case of air traffic controllers, but extend that to 18 months, then add another 2 years onto that.
Exactly.
So that person would, in theory, be vulnerable for being an at-will status for 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it did pass, the bill passed committee, you know, via party lines yesterday. There isn't companion language in the Senate yet, so we're going to have to see what happens there. Hopefully at this point, you know, FMA is, you know, going to work with congressional leadership, asking them to fully examine, you know, why do a 2-year period on top of training, and examine what we would like as well. So we'll see where it goes from now.
For the past few years, it seems to be that the House is the place that generates all of this stuff that many people consider anti-federal worker or would be adverse to the careers of federal workers. And in the Senate, sort of nothing happens. It may go over there, it may not, but sort of nothing happens. And I ask you about this being an election year, and the mm-hmm. president's a lame duck. Is this the kind of burning issue that the House and Senate are likely to go through? I mean, how realistic is it to worry about this?
You know, that's a good question, and I actually don't think, especially with it being an election year, it probably won't get that much attention just because there are probably bigger eggs to fry. There's probably things that sell better in local newspapers that, you know, congressmen want to see back in their districts. So it might, you know, just be quiet for now.
Yeah, you have the coincidence here of a lame duck president and an election year. Every member of the House, in theory, is up for re-election. In fact, with the gerrymandering and whatnot, only a relatively small number of seats are at play, but enough to give the Democrats control back in the House. A third of the Senate is up for a re-election, and the same situation prevails there. Yeah. So they're going to be, they being the politicians and the people that work for them, are going to be very busy getting them re-elected, or if they're not running, helping out their colleagues so that they can be in the majority rather than a minority system, a part of the House or the Senate. So maybe a year when not much happens.
Yeah, I think we're going to see, you know, rhetoric about trade programs, foreign policy, that's going to sell a little bit better. And I think that's what we're going to see up until the election.
Let me ask you about pay raises. Again, lame duck president, election year, much to the consternation of federal unions who supported him. President Obama hasn't been all that Fed friendly. He said he wanted to make government service cool again, but his blue ribbon panel proposed a number of things. The chain CPI, for one, which would reduce future cost of living adjustments for retirees and people under Social Security. He also, he proposed and backed a 2-year federal pay freeze. The Republicans in the Congress, particularly the House, seized on that and said, let's make it 3.
Yeah.
They did. So it's only been in the last 2 years that we've had federal pay raises, and they've been small. This year we had another one, the 1.3 and the 1% divided among locality pay. It's hard to pin it down. Last week we ran the pay charts in my column, and they're available to people to look at. What do you think of the prospects for a pay raise in 2017? I mean, is there a roadblock out there? Is it nobody cares? Some people believe that in an election year, federal workers do better because all members of Congress, even if they don't like feds, know it's a big block of people in Maryland, Virginia, California, Texas, Florida, Georgia. It's huge, New York State, huge block of federal workers and family members.
Well, I'd like to look at the fact that the reason why we've gotten a federal pay raise in the past couple of years is just because Congress and the president kind of remained silent on it. They didn't really vocalize the need for a pay raise, but they also didn't vocalize the need for a freeze. And so it just kind of went under the radar. And so that is how we got the 1% raise and the 1.3% with locality raise, just because no one was really making a big deal of it. So I don't know if the best bet for next year would just to be kind of quiet on it again. But it is interesting, like you were saying, President Obama, he hasn't been anti-Fed, but he hasn't been vocally supportive of the federal workforce either. And it's frustrating. As I mentioned before, federal workers do a lot of good works for the American public. And I think we need to bring more attention to that.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting to see because when he was elected, the federal union community and had very high hopes. And early on, of course, we had the recession, which was one of the worst since the Great Depression. But the White House didn't have those recognition ceremonies for distinguished services for members of the senior executive service, almost as if they pretended they weren't there.
Yeah.
And I know that enraged the Senior Executives Association.
Yeah.
They quietly stewed and then not so quietly stewed. And a lot of the unions have been disappointed. They've quietly attacked the pay raise. Probably would have been much tougher had a Republican done it. You're a management group, Federal Managers Association. How do you guys get along with the rank and file unions, the AFGE, NTEU, NFFE? And I mean, do you work in coalition or do you, or in a lot of things, NARF?
Yes. FMA is a member of the Federal Postal Coalition, which also AFGE, NTEU, they're members as well. And there are a lot of issues that we agree with the unions. And I work closely with their lobbyists as well. And, you know, I'm more than happy to talk with them about what our concerns are and listen to what their concerns are on issues. And there are some times where we disagree, but, you know, it's one of those agree to disagree. There are other things that we can work on collaboratively together, and I'm more than happy to.
What do you see as the future of the federal workforce? I mean, you think, is this too going to pass? Will something else happen, or are feds always going to be a target?
Feds are always going to be a target because they are an easy target. They are a low-hanging fruit. In the past, we have seen, you know, federal pay, federal benefits looked at as a means to offset spending, and it's easy to do. And that it's likely that'll happen in the future as well. And I think we just need to remain vigilant about what Congress is saying about the federal workforce, and remind them of the benefits of having a fully funded federal government.
I've talked to several federal union lobbyists and people who are in the business of protecting for federal workers and fighting for their benefits. And they say that the days probably of getting much, if anything, that's good for federal workers may have passed for a variety of reasons, political, fiscal, that sort of thing. And that really now, and they don't want to say this publicly, but that they really are kind of fighting a rear guard action every year to keep the status quo. And I know with NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, years back, the people who were in the know said if they could just keep the federal retirement system intact, mm-hmm. and not get any the new benefit, but if they could just keep that intact, they'd be earning their money. See?
Yeah, and it's interesting what you mentioned about the status quo, because I don't think that's sufficient anymore. The status quo is using a CR instead of going through the appropriations process. And I think that is a big hindrance to federal agencies and the federal workforce. You're asking FMA members to program, you know, or to budget out their programs and projects with hamstring budgets that can't really foresee what their needs are going to be. And you really just can't create an efficient and effective federal government that way.
Does it puzzle you that sequestration, which was a time bomb, snake bomb that went off, but sequestration the first year was a big deal. People were furloughed. There was government shutdowns. It was a mess. And then it sort of seemed to go away, although some agencies still speak of it selectively. And I'm looking at the case of the Defense Department, for example, the biggest part of the civilian government. And our defense correspondent, Jared Serbu, reported the other day that the Air Force is going to have a reduction in force. Mm-hmm. Now, it's relatively small, you know, in 160,000 Air Force civilians. This is about 1,000 people. But RIFs, as you well know, are much more disruptive than buyouts, because the buyout, they come to you and say, here's a $25,000 check. You want to leave, and you say yes or no. With a RIF, they come to you and say, your job is gone. Mm-hmm. And then if you're a senior employee, a long-time employee, if you have veterans' preference, you bump down to the next person, and then they bump and so on. So they can be very disruptive, even only 1,000 people in a big organization like that. What do you make of that?
I mean, definitely is disruptive. It's disruptive not only to the individual worker, but also then to the agency. All of a sudden, you're asked to do the same amount of work with less people there, and you're not going to get the same quality of work done.
When I was thinking about the pessimistic versus optimistic future for federal workers, at least in Congress, mm-hmm. the thing that your people in Cherry Point won out, that early extra leave for veterans, military veterans, with and it's not just service-connected disabilities, is it?
It's service-related disability, so not just combat.
Service-related, yeah.
Yeah, so if you were in combat or if you were just at, you know, at your home base and you received an injury, you can, you know, receive this benefit.
Right. Peacetime military can is a mm-hmm. lot of accidents. Take a short break here. We'll be right back on federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Jessica Maddox from the Federal Managers Association. We were saying one of the positive things, actually nothing bad happened to federal workers last year. A lot of things were proposed, but nothing mm-hmm. happened. So the rear guard action worked.
Yeah.
But the good thing was that Wounded Warriors bill that you guys and others got through Congress, and it's signed into law. Tell us what that does again.
So it provides additional sick leave, 104 hours of sick leave to first-year federal employees who qualify under the VA as 30% disabled or more. That extra time can only be used in their first 12 months of employment. And it's just basically giving a nice safety net to these young federal employees who are dealing with a traumatic injury.
And those are people, too, who, in addition to using this time to get to maybe a remote VA facility mm-hmm. for treatment, they're likely to get sick as well, too, mm-hmm. and need to use their regular sick leave.
Yeah, this additional leave can only be used for their VA disability. So if, you know, they come down with the flu or anything like that, they have to use their regular sick leave. So we're hoping that it's just going to help out a lot of people.
Yeah, and you wanted to talk about the birth of this, metamorphosis of this thing.
And it came out because one of our members, a manager, was talking with their employee. And it's through this positive employee engagement that we're seeing better efficiencies, better connections between management and labor. And I think that is the road to seeing more efficiencies and effectiveness, like, throughout the federal government. I know recently the Partnership for Public Service issued their best places to work in federal government, and they were saying there was a 1% increase in satisfaction throughout federal agencies. And I know that seems small, but you have to look at it as this is the first increase that we've seen in 4 years. And a lot of it is due to employee engagement. You have that conversation between labor and management, looking at how you can improve your agency, your department, how you can make things better, how you can serve the American public better.
Well, you know, when you say 1%, and that doesn't seem like much or anything, but given the trajectory, the way it's mm-hmm. been, I mean, it seems to me every year some good government group, Partnership for Progress or what have you, every year they come up with the best places to work, worst places to work, nearly always the same places.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see why that NASA would be more fun, not only because of the mission,
yeah.
but because of the pay scales, than would the Postal Service, you know, which deals so much with complaints. But it seems like the headline every year is morale has never been worse, except the year before that. You know,
yeah.
it just seems to be getting worse. So if it's gone up 1 percentage point, it's
great.
It's a lot.
And I know FMA is a member of the National Council of Labor Management, Federal Labor Management Relations. And one of the issues that we always talk about is the need for employee engagement. And I know at FMA's 78th annual national convention and management training seminar, this year our theme is employee engagement and what our managers can do to boost morale, make sure that their employees feel valued and that they're contributing to you know, the goals and missions of federal agencies and departments.
Is that the same as your national convention?
It is.
Okay, all right. So that's in March, right?
It's in March. It's March 13th through the 16th. And it's in Alexandria, Virginia this year.
Okay. I mean, is this invitation only or can managers drop in?
You do have to register for the event. Information for that is on FMA's website, which is www.fedmanagers.org. You don't have to be a member of FMA to go to our management training seminar. You can, you know, just be a federal manager. And I will say that the training seminars are aligned with OPM Senior Executive Service Executive Core qualifications. So we're going to have a lot of great speakers from OPM and, you know, senior leaders throughout the federal government.
Okay, so if you're a manager, it would be a good thing to drive. Where is it?
It's going to be in the in Alexandria, Virginia, in Old Town at the Crown Plaza.
Okay, but we've got just a couple of minutes here. Some parting thoughts, words of wisdom for the federal community or managers?
I would say that we need to look at the good works that federal employees do, how they contribute to society, how they protect American citizens at home and abroad. And just kind of focus on the good that we do.
You know, I've always wondered about this, and I've been to it numerous times, but we have this event on the Mall every year, and it's sort of, maybe it's Federal Employee Recognition Day, mm-hmm. But so many people complain it's feds honoring feds. Is there a way to expand that to get real people, non-federal workers, to see what government people do?
I know also that, so that day is during Federal Service Recognition Week. And I know there are a lot of events in D.C., but then there are also ways that federal employees across the nation can also have events.
Real good.
Yep.
Thank you. We'll see you all next week. Thanks for being here.